To the brightest audience in the country, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. We interrupt our annual telethon just 3 days in for an important interview. Anti-abortion activist in Idaho, Scott and Arlene Herndon, abolitionist fighting to end, not mend, the killing of children in the womb. They met in their state capitol with a Republican pro-life representative, Brent Crane. As we could predict from our 30 years of such efforts, the meeting did not go especially well. And on the line to talk us through what happened is Mr. Herndon. Scott, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. Your 10-year-old daughter was there also, correct?
She was. In fact, it was her 10th birthday, and everybody in the House of Representatives of Idaho knew that because she had been announced in the floor session at 11 a.m. and given a happy birthday by the Speaker of the House, Scott Bedke.
Wow, that's really nice. What a wonderful thing to happen. It didn't go especially well after that. We need to cover two things, how the meeting went and also the topic of the meeting. So we want to cover those both clearly so the audience understands not only the event but the issue, which is much more important.
All right. So my wife, Esther, and I planned a visit to the Idaho Capitol building with Brent Crane 3 weeks before the meeting on January 26th. He is the new chairman of the State Affairs Committee in the House, and that committee is the committee that hears all abortion-related bills. And so 3 weeks ago, before the session, I called him and we scheduled this meeting. So it was the primary focus of our visit to Boise on January 26th was the meeting with him at 2 p.m. But I know a lot of legislators in the Capitol, especially in the House, they have run several of my bill ideas before, including my abortion-related bill, which would outlaw abortion as murder. I had spoken to Brent Crane about that bill before 2 years ago.
All right.
And so we had great meetings with a number of other representatives before we arrived at the 2 p.m. meeting with Brent Crane.
So the meeting was not a surprise to Representative Crane, and he knew that you're an abolitionist. And the difference between the pro-life movement and abolition is abolition teaches people that it is immoral to regulate murder. It's literally immoral. It's not only a bad idea, it's not only not pragmatic, it not only delays the eventual ending of this Holocaust of killing children in the womb, it's actually immoral to regulate how you could, and then fill in the blank with any crime, how you could steal, how someone could rape, how someone could murder an innocent person as long as they comply with some requirements. That's all immoral. And the pro-life movement has filled the federal judiciary with Republican, pro-choice, pro-abortion judges. It's been a failure at the national level. It's been a failure at the local level, the pro-life movement. So instead, there is the abolition movement with the goal of actually fighting to end abortion. That's the actual goal. There are no intermediary goals.
That is correct. And in fact, I call the pro-life movement here in Idaho, it is the professional pro-life establishment. And what they in fact have done, for example, in Idaho, is over the last 10 years, they have run 21 abortion-related bills. These are your pro-life Republicans. And I call those bills pro-life abortion regulations. And all they have done is say where, when, how, why you can kill your child in an abortion. And our Idaho legislature, way back in Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton in 1973, a lot of people don't know, in Idaho, abortion is not legal because of a Supreme Court opinion. It is legal because the legislature at that time put into Idaho code permission to murder your child in an abortion in response to the Supreme Court decisions in 1973. And then as we have gained the additional 40 plus Supreme Court decisions since then, including last June's June Medical Services opinion, they continue to place more pro-life abortion regulations into Idaho code. And we are taking a completely different approach. And Brent Crane, our state affairs chairman, is totally familiar with what I am trying to do. Mm-hmm. And like I said before, he and I did talk about this bill 2 years ago when we first introduced the bill to the Idaho legislature. And that's sort of the background against which we had this meeting about a week ago.
And one more comment on the issue itself, and then we'll get to the meeting. The difference between abortion regulations and trying to abolish abortion, Roe v. Wade was itself, that Supreme Court opinion was basically an abortion regulation. It said you could have an abortion under these circumstances. It didn't permit late-term abortions. Abortion regulations, they merely prune the abortion weed, but they strengthen its root, and they make abortion seem more acceptable to the public, to judges, and to politicians. And so it's backfired on every level, politically, pragmatically, and morally. So could we go then to the meeting itself? 2 o'clock.
You bet. So we arrived at the Capitol Monday, and Monday afternoon I saw Brent Crane. I don't remember where I was. And he said, "Hey, Scott, we're still on for tomorrow." And he said, 2 o'clock, right? And I said, "Yes, sir, I'll see you tomorrow." He said, "I'm looking forward to it." And then after we came out of the House session, we were up in the gallery on Tuesday, January 26th at about 11 a.m. He came out of the House chambers and I was out front of the chambers talking to someone else. And he said, "Hey, Scott, still on for 2 o'clock, right?" I said, "Yes, look," and he said, "looking forward to it." So okay. 3 hours later, fast forward, we arrive at his office at 2 p.m. During the whole rest of the time, I had been meeting with other representatives. So we arrive at his office, Arlene, Esther, and I, and we are invited in. There's an outer office with his secretary and then his office. We sit down, and he says to me, "So what do you want to talk about?" Well, he knew what I wanted to talk about, of course. So I go ahead and start talking about our bill, which is called the Abortion Human Rights Act, because the question is about the human rights of the preborn child.
Sure.
And I ask him, I want to know make sure I understand what continuing objections you might have to the bill and how we might proceed with getting a hearing for the bill. And that conversation, he stated his objections. He said, "You know what my objections are. I don't want any accountability for the mothers in the bill. So if we outlaw abortion as murder, then we're going to let the mothers continue to murder." And I did know that was his objection, but I wanted to make sure I heard it from him again personally to make sure it hadn't changed. And then my wife, Arlene, asked him very simply, "Well, why do you have that objection to that being in the bill?" So we're maybe 2 minutes into the conversation and he goes to explain his objection, but he's clearly beginning to get upset as he's explaining his objection. And he then just simply says to his secretary, "Kelly, call security," which at the Idaho State Capitol means that he wants the Idaho State Police to come to his office because they are the security.
Yeah, right.
And so she proceeds to call the state police.
Now, Scott, we're familiar with the state police in the Colorado Capitol, but what in the world? So your wife is there. Your daughter is there. Did you guys realize that? What happened? Did a brawl break out? Was there screaming? Did you pick up his paperweight and throw it at him? What happened?
Well, I had a friend wonder if he figured it couldn't possibly be that he was that upset because he spilled coffee on himself 3 minutes before the meeting. That wasn't the case. He was wearing a nice clean suit.
Right.
And we certainly did not get upset at all. I was certainly surprised. I did not expect that direction for the meeting. My wife, whose father was an Oakland, California police officer in the 1970s and early 80s, she got up immediately because she thought to herself, well, I don't want Esther, the 10-year-old, to have to see us get dragged out of his office. So she gets up and she goes and intercepts the police officers that are arriving at the office. But in the whole meantime, Brent Crane never asked me to leave. So I'm still just sitting in his office. He's standing up and he's basically talking to me. And my wife started recording right at that moment where the first words out of his mouth to me are, Scott, you are arrogant and prideful. That's the first thing he said to me to proceed with the conversation. And then I just kind of stuck around and tried to bring it back to the policy. So she starts recording and we have that recording available. I put it up on my YouTube channel and on our Facebook page for our bill. And you can basically just hear what happens after that point. And there is, I do know the reason he was upset, but there's no reasonable explanation for it. And nobody else at the Capitol was upset with me that day.
So we have that audio. We have four brief clips that we selected for the audience that will play all together. And then maybe the last 5 minutes or so, we'll let that run. And you and I could talk after the first four clips and then maybe during or after the last 5 minutes. But this is going to begin with Representative Brent Crane saying, no, we will never penalize the woman. And an issue there is, well, if abortion is not something worthy of a penalty, then how serious could it be? Could it really be criminal if it's the only crime in the history of mankind that shouldn't be penalized? So these first four clips start with that.
Are you really serious? This is what you're going to do? I said, no, we will never penalize the woman. There are a number of different instances where we will not penalize the woman. It's not going to happen. I'm beyond livid at where you're at and what you're doing. So you will not get a hearing with this chairman if that's the tactic you're going to take.
I am going to continue to oppose witnesses your bad ideas.
I've saved more lives than you have. Because you don't have anything in code, Scott. Can you tell me which one of my bills you've come down and supported? Zero.
I haven't been in the legislative process for any of your bills.
Zero. So. But now, all of a sudden, Scott comes in with his bill, and it's the only bill.
All right. So, Scott, right through there, he's livid, and we hear your demeanor, which is completely calm. In fact, this is maybe, what, a 22-minute audio clip, and you're calm throughout, you're professional. He is livid, he's behaved badly, and it seems to me he's being rather petty when he says something like, which of my bills have you supported? We're talking about the killing of innocent children, and to be so petty as to take something like that, to use up the time you have to talk about something like that, is beyond the pale.
It is. We always have to keep in mind that this week in the state of Idaho, regardless of what pro-life bills have ever been considered or passed and signed into law, 28 children will be murdered at four murder super centers in the state of Idaho. 28 children, week after week, month after month, year after year. And so my focus is on those children that are being murdered. And I'm only interested in the policy of the state of Idaho that currently permits those murders to occur and what is the proper response of civil government before God delegated its authority by God to, in response to those murders. And so that's what I was there at the Capitol to do. And Brent Crane was not happy that we would oppose your traditional pro-life abortion regulations.
Well, the pro-life bills, what is it, H-17, is that the current bill he was supporting?
That is exactly right. Yeah, and we had met with a number of legislators about that particular bill.
And I'm so thrilled, hey, Scott, sorry for interrupting, but I'm so thrilled you were able to get at least one or more to realize the problems. When you have a so-called pro-life bill and it says, well, look, some tax money could be used to kill some babies and high schools can dispense the abortion pill to kill some babies. This is so far from what a moral piece of legislation would look like. It is unacceptable, and it's why we've had abortion for decades nationwide. And when we say 28 children a week are killed in Idaho, that's surgical abortions, right? Chemical abortifacients, like the morning after pill, Plan B, that is being dispensed to women, including to teenagers, like candy. And there is a holocaust of children killed by chemical weapons that we're actually not aware of the scope of it.
That is true. The chemical abortion rate in Idaho is very high. The number also doesn't include, for example, the entire northern part of the state. Mothers in the northern part of the state leave the state to kill their children and kill them over in Spokane and Pullman, Washington, by the hundreds every year, right, just in surgical abortion as well, which the state of Idaho has no jurisdiction over that. But the point is, the problem in the state of Idaho is quite large, and we're looking at a minimum of 1,750 children killed every year, plus those that are undocumented.
Wow. And when we say we don't have jurisdiction over it, if a family took their three kids across the border to Canada and killed them and came back, I think we'd have jurisdiction over that. So yeah, you're being
the
gracious.
The problem is, in the law, yeah, they don't view it that way.
Right, exactly.
So the prosecutor's going to say it's outside of my jurisdiction, so he's not going to want to take that up.
You're exactly right. And that's what your Abortion Human Rights Act is. One of the things it will do is to get people to think in terms that these are actually children who are being murdered. That's what's actually happening.
That's exactly right, because right now in the state of Idaho, if a man murders a pregnant woman, we have several men in the Department of Corrections serving life sentences, two life sentences, one for killing the preborn child and one for killing the mother. And so right now there's inequity in law. We are not recognizing and accepting that that preborn child deserves equal justice, regardless of who kills that child.
So now your wife, Arlene Herndon, comes into the picture. You were speaking with the representative for a long time. And in the audio, people will be able to hear the entire audio, but it's, you could tell it's practically immediately at the beginning of the conversation, he calls for security, which means he's calling for the state police. And that was bizarre, because you could tell your demeanor, you and your wife throughout, as professional as could be, calm, civil, and eventually he actually asks the state police to escort you guys out, which is bizarre because he never even asked you to leave.
He never did. And in fact, when he did that, it's kind of like him putting his final exclamation point. The reason he said it at that moment is, I said, we're not here to be lectured by you, when he basically said conversation 101, which you'll hear in the clip.
Well, yeah.
Well, we're not going to be here. We're not going to remain. So I had turned around and basically indicated, Arlene, we're leaving. And that's just his exclamation point to
right,
essentially show his power.
Yeah, power play, intimidation, as Arlene put it. Also, the pettiness and the inability to recognize what a conversation is. A conversation is two or more people talking to one another, and we do tend to interrupt to address the point you just made before you go on to your next point. That's just normal, civil, polite conversation.
Well, he wanted to have a monologue, and the only reason we would even attempt to interject is because he was saying things that were not true.
Right, exactly.
And so if he's going to say things that are not true in that moment, I'd like to correct the record
sure,
of what he's saying
sure,
with him.
And the demeanor you are using with me on this show is exactly how you talked to Representative Crane. So now let's go to the last minutes of your meeting in his office.
Thank you, Ross. Appreciate it.
Hi.
Not really needed.
What?
The intimidation. But oh, the Lord bless you.
Trust me.
He's on the other side. I just want to encourage you that I'm praying for you, and God is on the side of protecting children, even from people that say they don't want division, but they just want to protect.
You guys are causing division.
Division is not what God cares about.
Oh,
he cares about rights.
You want to? Yeah, he does.
If slavery versus division, he cares about slavery. If murder by abortion versus division, he cares about murder.
Stop the tape. Stop the tape. Scott, your wife is just so perfect. It's brilliant. Jesus said, I didn't come to bring peace, but a sword. Division. And when justice, righteousness, morality is at stake, then unity is the enemy if the price paid is the killing of innocent children.
No, that's true. He actually quoted in the office with me Proverbs 6:17-19 in the office, which talks about the seven things God hates. One of those being hands that shed innocent blood. But the reason he brought it up wasn't about that one. It was about causing division among brethren. And his claim is that Scott and Arlene, you're being evil because you're dividing the professional pro-life movement.
Right.
You're causing division. And that matters more than whether 28 children are being killed this week in Idaho.
Right. And we'll continue.
If murder by abortion versus division, he cares about murder by abortion. I just want to encourage
I understand he is deeply
Thank
concerned
you.
About it.
Yeah, I forgive you for the intimidation against women and children. You have purposely intimidated me and my daughter.
I've not intimidated
anybody. My father was an officer killed in the line of duty, and you didn't even ask us to leave. We came all the way down here from Sandpoint to meet with you.
Yeah.
And you called for security without even asking us.
Because I saw where it was
it's
going.
It's not necessary.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, really? You, mm-hmm. I mean, the Bible says you ought not assume evil of people. You could just ask us to leave.
Then you shouldn't be going around trying to kill pro-life bills.
We aren't.
I didn't assume evil.
We're trying to
I saw and heard evil with
just
my
make
own
it
eyes.
Better.
No, you're not.
We would support it.
Stop the tape.
Defunding.
I saw where it was headed. So this was a preemptive strike, Scott, against you and Arlene. And he says, I saw evil. He's actually calling you evil. I doubt in his legislative history there for what, 15 years, all these kids have been killed. I doubt whenever he's met with a Democrat who's radical pro-abort, he's ever called them evil. I doubt it. I bet you if Planned Parenthood was in his office with him, he wouldn't call them evil. He'd be far more tolerant, willing to hear them out.
That's exactly what I thought after I watched this video and listened to it, is I thought, would he ever treat Planned Parenthood lobbyists the way he treated us? And I doubt it.
He never would. And we know we're extrapolating from 100 interactions with legislators, not only in Colorado, but around the country. So I saw where it was headed. How is that? Well, we heard where it was headed. We heard the whole thing. And he called you evil, Scott. And you're evil because you're saying we can't have laws that regulate how and where, when, why you can kill innocent children. We can't have that. It's wrong. So that's what Representative Crane calls evil.
Better.
No, you're not.
We would support it. We would support a defunding of taxation for abortion. 100%.
I haven't seen you guys support. In 15 years, I've cared.
We told him this morning. We would totally
you don't want to hear what I have to say, do you?
I do.
Okay. I've carried pro-life legislation for 15 years. I haven't seen you down here one time supporting a single bill I've tried to do. But now you're going to come in on your white horse and tell me, A, I don't know what I'm doing. B.
No, I don't believe that. I believe you do know what you're doing. I have a lot of respect. Just
I am
know,
happy to talk with you.
I do.
But one of the things I really require is when I'm talking, you treat me with respect and you listen.
Oh, brother.
And secondly, when you're talking, I'll treat you with respect.
Okay, I only wanted to correct that I do respect you as a legislator.
No, you don't.
Okay.
Because if you did, you wouldn't be interrupting when a legislator who has the ability to control your bill, you wouldn't be interrupting him. Do you think if I'm going to try to get something from the President of the United States, I'd walk in there approach him the way you approached me?
Oh, brother.
You're right. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So you've never been here in the last 15 years. On any of the major ones, and you and Scott ride on your white horse and are trying to kill everything we're trying to do. I won't
talk.
I won't tolerate it, period. Your bill will not get a hearing as long as you continue with those tactics. You'll either get in with the pro-life community and you'll support the efforts of the pro-life community, or you won't. That's your decision.
May I answer?
Yeah.
Okay. We will support everything that does not have evil in it. 100%, we will. And when it does have evil, we will not assume evil. We will simply try to help guide it or challenge where it might be unconstitutional.
It's fair.
Or immoral.
That's fair. But to assess that, to assert that Bruce and I are doing something that's evil, we both go to the same church.
No, we don't. Okay.
We raised $80,000. For our Lifeline Crisis Pregnancy Center this year. Don't know what your church raised for pro-life causes, but that was my church.
Stop the tape. Oh, brother. Scott, I went to a church that raised money and bought an ambulance for Israel. We shipped it over to Jerusalem. So does that prove that my church is better than his church? Talk about obfuscating. The issue is whether or not we should treat the killing of innocent children as murder. Are these kids being murdered? And if so, then all of his regulations for 15 years where he regulated how, when, where, why you can kill these children, it's all been immoral, and none of it has ended child killing.
Yeah, you're correct. It has not ended any of it. One of his big pro-life successes of the last 10 years that he was the main sponsor of was what's called the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act.
It's horrific.
Which is your typical, and this is in our conversation, he was a little confused about this. For the pro-life expert in the room, he seemed a little confused and was crossing that over with a heartbeat bill. But we did pass a 22-week so-called ban on abortion that this federal district court said, no, thank you, that's unconstitutional, and the Ninth Circuit upheld it. So that's just an example of one of his legislative successes that capitulated to the absolutely immoral and unconstitutional opinion of the Supreme Court that mothers have a right to kill their children. And he claims that's one of his great victories that we should have been there with him on.
And in fact, he's basically legislating Roe v. Wade, because Roe v. Wade was sort of like a late term abortion regulation. You can kill your baby, but not late term. So the abortion industry has gone full circle to where they're pretty much happy. They call it a victory if they get what Roe v. Wade was at the beginning. And by the way, 19 states decriminalized child killing, abortion, to varying degrees before Roe v. Wade, starting in 1966 with abortion if the father was a criminal in Mississippi, then 67 in Colorado, and then Ronald Reagan signed in 67 the Colorado bill in California, which was abortion for all kinds of reasons. And it got to where New York State decriminalized abortion for any reason throughout most of pregnancy. So the states, the federal government, there is guilt all over. In Idaho, after all this time, and the legislators don't know that we have to be focused on abolishing abortion, not mending it, but ending it, they should know that. Let's continue.
Center this year. Don't know what your church raised for pro-life causes, but that was my church personally. So don't come in here and act like I'm not pro-life or that I don't care about this issue. You don't know me. You don't know anything about me. And I take great offense to the way you guys have come in here and approached this thing. Your husband and I had a very nice conversation on the phone. I anticipated having the same. But when I found out you're trying to kill bills that advance the cause, I'm livid.
Just make some changes to it, make it perfect.
Coming in and saying, hey, Representative, I've got some potential changes. Would you be willing to look at these? That's different.
We went to the author of the bill, just so you know. We went to Bruce first. I thought
going to other people and saying, will you take your name off as a co-sponsor, has nothing to do with being productive and advancing the life, the cause of life.
Oh,
it has
brother.
Everything to do with getting your own way. And that doesn't work with this chairman. It never has.
Oh,
it never will. You can blow up my email inbox. You can call here with as many people as you want. But this guy is rock solid in what he believes, and you won't move me.
I respect that. I would only encourage you to care the very most about what God would have you do about abortion.
I understand what God says about life.
28 children every week. You are the one in charge of what gets heard.
Where were you 15 years ago when I started this cause? Where were you 14 years ago when I carried legislation? Where were you 13 years ago when I carried?
If I can interrupt,
you can't.
Outside of an abortion clinic, so.
I stand outside of the abortion clinic.
You weren't here in the arena.
I go to Spokane with Esther, and we get attacked by polar bears.
Stop the tape. The arena is the child killing center. That's the arena and the legislative body. That's also a significant part of the battle. But, Scott, you know, I hate the fact that this is defocusing, but for Representative Brent Crane to be so petty and say to your wife, where were you when she was on the front lines? That's not the issue. The issue is, Representative Crane, is your bill immoral? That's the issue. But that's the last thing he wanted to talk about.
And that is the entire thing that we talked about. H-17, the bill that's in question that we were talking to representatives about. Literally, I did a video walkthrough of that bill this week. Almost every section of that 4-page bill has something evil and immoral in it. Every section, it completely heads us in the absolutely wrong direction.
Yes.
Judicial supremacy, federal supremacy. You can kill these babies with taxpayer money. And it doesn't even attempt to end the actual taxpayer money that we pay to murder providers in the state, $390,000 to Planned Parenthood last year and Darren L. Wyrish. It doesn't even attempt to touch that because federal supremacy is in place, firmly entrenched in the House of Representatives, and that's what we're trying to undo. That's our approach.
And the wording, the whole terminology that the bill is couched in, like referring to abortion as a medical service. Not only were the concepts immoral when you could pay to kill some children and you could have some high school students given the abortion pill, you know, if the circumstances are right, but the whole thing was couched in the terminology of the child killers. And that's got to change the entire mindset. In order for us to win this battle, we have to stop using the concepts and the terminology of the enemy. Let's continue.
I go to Spokane with Esther and we get attacked by polar bears. That's really what we do.
I have fought.
Just so you know.
I have fought in the arena.
I believe.
And so to come down here and try to act like I don't know what I'm doing,
you didn't know what you're doing.
Okay.
I would.
You and your wife both have a problem.
We don't.
He doesn't like being interrupted. He wants to express how he feels.
You can ask any communication expert, but to interrupt somebody, this is just like communication 101, guys.
Oh,
this
brother.
This is embarrassing. I'm having to tell you this.
I'm not interested in being, you know.
Okay. Security, go ahead and take him on out. I spent my time. Thanks.
Security, take him on out. So, Scott, you guys got a police escort.
Well, what's funny is literally about 5 minutes later, we saw him up in another office because we're back talking to more legislators. So
right.
He has his little power center there in his back corner, but he doesn't get to regulate the whole Capitol. And so we did see him multiple other times. We had great meetings afterward with the assistant majority leader about this very topic, also asking him to oppose H-17. So we're going to continue doing what we're doing. I say that if Brent Crane wants to save one baby, then he should go down and plead out in front of the Meridian Planned Parenthood Killing Center. He can save a baby, but the duty of the legislature, delegated by God, is to outlaw all criminal murder in the state of Idaho and apply the laws of the Constitution of the state of Idaho and the United States equally to all people, including mothers who hire assassins to kill their children. That's their duty. And as long as they fall short of their duty, they're falling short of their obligation before God.
Yes, and when Representative Crane said that he saved more lives than you guys have, he was looking at one side of an equation. If you pass an abortion regulation, right? Let's say you ban late-term abortion, like Europe. Europe, they have virtually no pro-life movement or abolition movement at all, practically. And they have no late-term abortion. And when we have interacted with activists, which are very few over in Europe, and journalists, European left-wing journalists, they say, well, we don't have an anti-abortion movement because we have humane abortion, not like America. We don't have late-term abortion. We have reasonable restrictions on abortion. So something that Brent Crane, I think, has never considered once in his legislative career is the other side of the equation. In what way might my abortion regulations backfire? And they backfire like this. When you make abortion seem more humane, you make it more acceptable to the public. and to judges and to politicians, and you might help keep abortion legal for another 50 years. Your regulations, pruning the abortion weed, are strengthening its root. And abortion, they might keep killing kids for another 50 years precisely because of what you've done. Not in spite of what you've done, but because of what you've done, because you've convinced judges that abortion in Idaho is really increasingly reasonable.
Agreed. And I would tell you that one organization that has profited from pro-life regulations are organizations, in the particular one, Planned Parenthood. They've used pro-life regulations to outcompete their competition and to make bigger, better, quote, safer child killing facilities. And so you're actually facilitating them being a better child killer with your pro-life regulations.
Yeah, it's the consolidation of the distribution channel of an industry. Like when there were, do you remember decades ago, there were these mom and pop video shops, they rented VHS movies. You'd go in and pay $4, you'd rent a movie. And then Blockbuster came and put them out of business. That wasn't the end of people watching movies. If anything, it increased it. But then Netflix came and put Blockbuster out of business. And that's what's been happening. Regulations make it harder for smaller businesses to stay in business. So you consolidate an industry. Planned Parenthood has grown stronger. And with chemical abortions, they're very possibly killing more kids than they have ever killed. But the pro-life industry is taking credit for something they don't even comprehend what they have done.
I agree. And unfortunately, it will continue unless abolitionists are in the arena, and that includes the legislative arena, holding legislators accountable to what they should be doing in a response to massive child killing in our states.
Yes, exactly. So, Scott, will you pass on my thanks to Arlene and to your daughter for having the courage to be there with you guys? And I hope this is the first time you and I have spoken. Is that right, personally?
It is.
So I hope we can stay in touch. It's thrilling to hear about your work, and we love you guys.
Thank you. We appreciate being on. I will pass on your regards. Esther did great that day, and she's been in the fight with us her entire life, all 9 years or 10 years now of her life.
That's just super. Thank you, Scott Herndon. That was an honor speaking with Scott, and we will link to his work. So if you come to our website, kgov.com, today, February 3rd, 2021, you'll find that contact information. Now, at the top of the show, I said that this is the third day into our telethon, but we had to break for that important interview. Yesterday, we looked at one of the 12 top accomplishments of Bob Benyart Live over the last 30 years. And on our About page, kgov.com/about, we have our top 12 contributions and our top 12 accomplishments. And while yesterday had to do with criminal justice, today, obviously, we could look at the accomplishments that relate to the effort to stop the killing of innocent children. And on this list of accomplishments is that this program, Bob Benyart Live, basically launched a group called American Right to Life. American Right to Life. You can find it at AmericanRTL.org/regulations. That will give you an article explaining why regulations regulating murder is immoral and how it backfires. That's AmericanRTL.org/regulations. We could really use your help. Our goal is $50,000. We're only on one radio station, so that does make it a bit of a challenge, but with your help, we'll reach that. It's not only American Right to Life that we launched. And by the way, American Right to Life has always supported what? Regulating child killing? No, not one regulation, not ever. Only abolition. Only abolition to recognize that at the moment of conception, the unborn child is a person made in God's image and God's likeness, and to intentionally kill that person is murder. We've also launched ProLifeProfiles.com. You may have seen that powerful website showing how so many alleged pro-life heroes, like, for example, Antonin Scalia, or many pro-life groups, supposedly, National Right to Life and so on, how Antonin Scalia was flat-out pro-abortion, and you find that from his own words, and you'll see that at ProLifeProfiles.com, but also National Right to Life, not only regulating murder, child killing, but opposing every effort to establish the right to life of the unborn child, when that's actually in their name, right to life. So here at Bob Bennett Live, boy, do we appreciate our listeners and our supporters. In fact, since yesterday's program, thank you, Brian from Westminster, Colorado, $200. Bob, keep up the good fight. And Robert from Denver, $200. Bob, outstanding program. Isn't that so kind? Thank you. And Charles from Aurora, Colorado, $300. Boy, what's going on? Nobody's given like 25 or 10. Thank you, guys. This is really encouraging. And our telethons, they tend to start slow. And we think after 30 years, we figured out why. Because our audience gets a chance to torture us. And it's really, it's always a challenge. But we love you guys. And most often, we meet our goal. Our goal is very reasonable to help us stay on the air for a whole year. This is our annual telethon, $50,000. And we're just beginning. You crawl before you can walk, right? And before you could run. So we're at, what, $1,600? $1,600. If you want to help, you could go to our website, kgov.com, click on the store, or you could call us, 1-800-8-NYART. We'd love to get a call from you. 1-800-836-9278.